I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro. I need the noises of destruction.
This is Bro on the Global Television Beat, Breaking Glass. Today's episode, semi-annual survey of alternative media. Something's rotten in NATO. As the world draws closer to nuclear war, led by the United States and cheered on by the vassal countries of the NATO alliance, even as those countries face the prospect of deindustrialization and a frozen winter, it may be time to update Winston Churchill's announcement of the Cold War in describing the role of Western media. From Barcelona on the Mediterranean to Philadelphia on the Atlantic, an Iron Curtain has descended across the West. Because of the impenetrability of this Iron Curtain, there is almost no anti-war movement to speak of in the West. To question the war is simply forbidden. Do it, and you will end up censored and ostracized, even as it draws us all closer to Armageddon. As the European economy tanks, as in France, even bakeries close because electricity is too expensive to keep them open. As the environmental crisis worsens, to which can now be added the massive leaks from the sabotaging of the Russian pipeline, weirdly blamed on the Russians themselves. And as the developing world braces for a lack of food, energy, and fertilizer. All the result of U.S. sanctions, which according to the alternative media site Multipolarista, 87% of the world's population do not support. Meanwhile, U.S. liberals champion the cause of a free Ukraine, while actually turning a blind eye to the constant slaughter of Ukrainians being used as cannon fodder in a useless proxy war between the U.S. and Russia that, with any will on the side of the West, could have been solved through diplomacy. Deafened also to the omnipresent and ever-growing presence of the fascist Azov Brigade, where, as Jimmy Dore points out, video after video features its members parading with Nazi regalia. And to the hardening of Zelensky's government in its anti-labor, anti-union stance, while refusing any attempt at negotiation. A word about what used to be called liberals, but which today constitute the most adamant warmongers and hawks in the West, with, for example, the German Green Party Foreign Secretary Annalena Baerbock betraying the anti-nuclear origins of that party and instead calling for an unceasing war with language that would make the always bellicose Boris Johnson blush. Biden's neocons posing as right thinkers, Secretary of War or State, Anthony Blinken, Ukraine coup-monger Victoria Nuland, and stoker of the nuclear flame and security advisor Jake Sullivan promote a rules-based order, which simply means the U.S. makes the rules and imposes its order. The order being that proposed in the mid-90s Wolfowitz Doctrine, which states that no country, business, or entity shall challenge U.S. dominance and hegemony. This self-defined standard stands in sharp contrast to the actual rules-based order, the UN Charter, which the U.S. has been in constant violation of in its, according to Ben Norton, 251 interventions since 1991, after the demise of its challenger, the Soviet Union. It's a sad state of affairs in the West, and the effect of this Iron Curtain, that the voices of peace and reason are the war criminal Henry Kissinger, the con man Donald Trump, and the Ponzi scheme crackpot Elon Musk. Liberal is no longer a term which accurately describes this group, sanctimoniously hiding behind the patina of human rights, which has been converted into, as George Galloway's guest UN scholar and diplomat Alfred Dezaeus terms it, the business of human rights. These so-called liberals have supported all these interventions, in fact, never met a war or an incursion that furthered the empire's quest for raw materials they didn't like. A more accurate contemporary moniker for this group is imperial neoliberals. That is, on the foreign front, cheering on invasions, and on the domestic, occasionally giving lip service to improving the main question of the time in the U.S., income inequality, while actually doing nothing about that continually accelerating disparity, except blaming the symptom, the popularity of Donald Trump. That is, upper and upper middle class elites benefiting from this prolonged attack on working and now middle class people while coyly claiming to support them. 3 weeks before the midterm elections, Democrats had to be reminded that voters were hurting and less able to afford food, energy, and shelter. While the solution Republicans proposed, giving bigger tax breaks to the rich, would exacerbate, not solve, the problem. A superb example of the Iron Curtain was the disparity between the visual and verbal ending of Biden's speech at the September opening of the General Assembly of the UN. As Biden stumbled hopelessly and helplessly across the stage in danger of teetering off it, a British voice, representing that country's role as U.S. lapdog, extolled the warlike and aggressive speech Biden had just read from a teleprompter. "Mr. President, thank you. At the end of such a momentous event, the word thank you seems kind of inadequate for all the millions whose lives will be saved and for all those whose lives will be transformed. Thank you." This disconnect between the propaganda machine and reality couldn't better represent the power and vacuity of the Western media, not only cut off from reality, but from the rest of the world as well. An apt illustration of a failing and feeble empire, what Noam Chomsky, an Indian journalist and developing world historian Vijay Prashad, call in their new book, The Fragile Empire, propped up by the screeching voiceover of a media whose job it is to proclaim that all is well. All that was covered of the General Assembly opening in the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, etc., was Biden's speech, moderate and tempered, and the Russian and Iranian speeches, rabble-rousing and belligerent. The truth, though, is that much closer to the majority was that of the Indonesian Minister for Foreign Affairs, Retno Marsudi, who urged, in the face of the pandemic, a collapsing economy and global warming, peace and an end to war. The majority view was never represented in the imperial media. The media blackout is so complete, and the defunding and censoring of actual alternative media so thorough that the very nature of alternative media has now changed. Just 2 years ago, when this survey was last published, it was still possible to speak of progressive media. Now, most of that media has simply collapsed into the hardly dissenting and not very left wing of the Democratic Party, simply echoing mainstream views while often seeing as its mission to hold the line against actually dissenting opinions in what remains of an independent media. In the face of this collapse, then, it is important to highlight the often underfunded and mostly viewer-sponsored media that maintains a critical view in face of the Maginot Line, which states that anything short of gung-ho acceptance of the escalation of the U.S.-NATO proxy war, both in the Ukraine and the coming war in China, is traitorous. With that in mind, here are five sites that continue the battle in these bleak times and that have not surrendered their values for whatever institutional funding or scraps from the imperial table might be available. The mother of all talk shows with George Galloway. Former British parliamentarian, Galloway is now the dean of actual alternative media, assembling with his array of guests and with his stentorian opening monologue, a nearly Shakespearean rendering of the ignominies of the week on a program that is a breath of fresh air in an otherwise captured media. Listen to arms regulator Scott Ritter, our Ukraine correspondent on the ground, Gonzalo Lira, and compare their versions of what is actually happening in the war, both of which concentrate on the needless slaughtering of the Ukrainians in an unwinnable situation, with that of the bright, cheery resistance stories from Le Monde and the New York Times. The difference is eye-opening, and the gap needs to be accounted for. Galloway continues to be the doyen of current actually resistant media. A shout out also to the always on point Garland Nixon, whose no holds barred take on the lunacy among the corruption of Washington politicians is stellar. The Socialist Program with Brian Becker. Becker's analysis, crisp and on target, of both the wider implications of this new global war and his historical understanding of the successes and failures of the Russian and Chinese revolutions is extraordinary. His thoughtful recapping of the history of the current Ukrainian conflict, its origin in the U.S.-sanctioned coup in 2014, and the subsequent killing of over 14,000 Russian-speaking inhabitants of the Donbass, as well as his and frequent guest Eugene Puryear's accounting of the broken promises concerning NATO advancement to the east, constantly give the lie to the rules-based order, as do infrequent appearances by the aforementioned Vijay Prashad. Nothing short of miraculous is his six-part series with Chinese history scholar Ken Hammond on the twists and turns of that revolutionary government's foreign policy, now updated with the analysis of Dongxing News' Ting Chak's recounting of how China has gone from one of the poorest countries on earth to now having a life expectancy for its citizens that exceeds that of the U.S. A must for anyone wishing to have a more full-bodied take on the U.S.-China conflict and the motor driving it, a topic of a recent episode with economist Richard Wolff, a regular guest, who explained that a possible effect of the decoupling of the U.S. and China which supplies cheap goods to the American market, might be more deleterious for the American working class than even the effects of the current inflationary spiral, itself the result, as he explained, of a greedy raising of prices by U.S. capitalists. Multipolarista with Ben Norton. Journalist Norton split with the Gray Zone, which does mostly investigative reporting, to instead provide a more global perspective on the dawning multipolar world. His analysis is underlaid by the economic wisdom of frequent guest Michael Hudson, who on a recent show explained that what we are seeing is not the end of the greed is good neoliberal order, but rather an acceleration of that order, and who also pointed out that it was never a peaceful order, relying for its wealth on a host of military incursions in the Middle East and Africa. Norton's multi-part series with political scientist and historian Aaron Good, author of American Exception, Empire in the Deep State, is a thoroughgoing examination of the dark, undemocratic forces that have always vied for contention within American democracy, and which are now in ascendance, utterly calling the shots in the face of two consecutive presidents, one a con man who could be blackmailed, and the other a now feeble-minded shell of a man who was in touch with the deepest and darkest forces of American politics and the American state from his long history of racist remarks almost the moment he became Senator Credit Card from the corporate tax haven of Delaware. Multipolarista is where to go to get a different perspective on the global challenge to U.S. hegemony. The Jimmy Dore Show. Dore, as he loves to point out, a comedian operating out of his basement in L.A., is the funniest and wickedest commentator on American politics and especially on the corruption of the Democratic Party. With the aid of his frequent journalist guests, Aaron Mate, Glenn Greenwald, and Max Blumenthal, he has also made himself an astute truth-teller on the global situation as the U.S. draws ever nearer to a simultaneous confrontation with Russia and China. A special part of the show are the calls from Impressionist Mike McRae, whose spot-on renderings of Hollywood Illuminati, such as Al Pacino, Harrison Ford, Vince Vaughn, and Brad Pitt, hilariously call attention to the vacuousness and promotional self-serving behind entertainment business trendsetters and do-gooders. The skits the two fashion together are what many decades ago, the now totally sold-out and cowardly Saturday Night Live was like at its origins. Means Morning News with Sam Sachs. This is another show where budget cuts, as more truthful alternative media is defunded, have hurt. The show lost its co-host and is not as strong with a single voice, as well as airtime being cut, now relying for much of its reporting on scanning the internet. Still, it is the place to go for union and working class news and updates, even featuring a section titled This Week in Working Class History. More appropriate than ever, in these times when U.S. oligarchs are lionized while those from around the world are demonized, is a segment naming the Rich Dick of the Week, an honor recently won by landlords in general as rents become unaffordable and the former American dream of owning a house unthinkable, and won another week by Chipotle CEO Brian Nichol, who, on owner-friendly CNN, called a union of his own workers, which he attempted to halt a third party, interceding between our restaurant teams and our company, and who beat out Apple's Tim Cook for also engaging in a similar campaign of union busting. As the world prepares yet another climate summit and the UN calls this last year of global war a wasted year in halting the effects, the New York Times weighed in with an article where its climate expert David Wallace Wells proclaimed the world instead on the brink of heading toward a less apocalyptic future. The Times may refuse to capitalize it, but there's only one apocalypse or end of the world. As the Times style sheet would say, it's like saying less unique. But it does the job of softening the blow and letting us all live with the effects of not confronting the ever-expanding profits of the fossil fuel companies, suggesting that the ship of state may be able to totter on the edge for a few more years before tipping over the falls into total collapse. The reason for the Times' exuberance may be found in the same edition where a German analyst admits that the West is providing just enough weaponry for Ukraine, quote, to survive so that Russia should not win, but also not lose. A tacit admission that one of the points of the war is simply a dumping ground for U.S. and NATO weapons and a boost to the weapons industry and its direct representative in the Biden administration, former Raytheon exec and now Defense Secretary Mark Esper. Ukraine was the promised booty after the devastating for that industry closing of the 20-year weapons sinkhole of Afghanistan. It's thanks to the five outlets above that any kind of clear-eyed view of the world may emerge in the wake of an almost total collapse of progressive media and politicians, which could not have been more clearly seen than in the mealy-mouthed, meager plea of 30 Democrats for the Biden administration, as nuclear war looms, to perhaps consider negotiating. This meek response was met with a resounding no from corporate media and politicians, and then promptly withdrawn as these so-called progressives retreated back under the umbrella of a state whose foreign policy is often dictated by the weapons industry. These media outlets, often lone wolves crying in the wilderness, are ever more essential today as the media propaganda mill and Iron Curtain props up an empire that, with its economic power fading, attempts to instead compete in its last remaining area of clear dominance, weapons and war, and may not mind taking the rest of the world down with it as it goes. This is Bro on the Global Television Beat, signing off and breaking glass. Oh, change of mind,
simple breaking glass. Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. His current book is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality, The End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge. C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes, jazzistiques et artistiques, à notre écoute.